in fairness to the modulars.
Welcome, everyone. I will call the Joint Committee on Implementing Measure 91 together to order. We are going to start today by opening a public hearing on Joint Memorial 91. Adam.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 12 urges Congress to support the development of solution to the financial issues arising from the marijuana industry and to declassify marijuana as a Schedule I drug under the Federal Controlled Substances Act. There is no revenue impact to this measure, nor is there a fiscal impact.
Okay, we are going to, my apologies, I'm still half asleep. I meant to say Senate Joint Memorial 12, for the record. And we are going to...
It would have been very fitting if it was 91.
We are going to start out with our star witness, Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Madam Co-Chair, Ted Farioli, for the record, Senate District 30. I don't know why every morning has to start out with a lousy pot pun, but this is a joint memorial, and it's a joint memorial to Congress. And all of the folks here can read the whereases, which are... pretty extensive and really make the case for an appeal to Congress to unschedule marijuana. And I want to really make this clear for the record because sometimes legislative intent matters in these issues. Rescheduling isn't going to solve our problem. If you just moved it from a 1 to a 2, you'd still have a whole web of regulatory issues that were insurmountable. Unscheduling is probably the solution, which would make a whole bunch of other solutions possible. Research by universities and institutions of higher learning is probably the greatest immediate benefit. But also, I think we'd be able to make a stronger case for what should be obvious to people. If you've got folks running around with shoeboxes stuffed with rolls of $100 bills, even in a regulated environment that we hope to achieve with all of the work that we're doing with the committee, the joint committee, you still haven't really improved public safety. You still have risk. You still have unanswered questions about depositories or even following the Cole Memorandum, which essentially talks about financial tracking, which is really not possible unless you've got access to the federal banking system, where, you know, I think arguably you could say the best tracking occurs with the appropriate filing and the appropriate oversight. So what the memorial does is essentially asks Congress to take a look at the number of states that are engaged in some form of legalization, which I think it's rather astounding to consider that so many states have recognized the need for a regulatory framework for medical marijuana. And now four states in D.C. have legalized possession for recreational use. You know, if I was to speculate which of those states are on the side of history, I would say people are migrating toward a legal system as opposed to one that exists in a prohibition system. So, you know, the majority of states, I believe, are going to move to legalization. So many have already moved toward recognizing, 23 states have recognized medical as legitimate use. So really the memorial is just our little love note to Congress to say, please help us unscramble this issue by unscheduling marijuana and dealing with the financial prohibitions in the federal banking system. Other than that, it makes pretty interesting reading. The whereases really do give you a snapshot of where the state of marijuana legalization and decriminalization and the end of prohibition in the whole U.S. is. So, other than that, I'll try to ask questions. I had this drafted on behalf of the committee, and anyone who wants to join in sponsorship is welcome to do that at any point in time.
Thank you, Senator Farrelly, and thank you for your leadership on this. And I don't know if all of the committee members are aware, but Senator Farrelly actually convened a work group on banking issues, and that's what really led to this memorial, as I understand it.
You know, Madam Chair, at risk to my own well-being, I will correct the chair. The working group actually was an idea that came from this committee, but it was convened by the governor's office.
Oh, well,
so we're sort of piggybacking on the work that's happening there, because I think the governor's staff realizes that in order to have a solution, there are a lot of folks that need to be involved in that. It's been the folks from the banking sector, from credit unions. M-Bank was involved, the treasurer, the secretary of state, just a whole bunch of folks who have a piece of the puzzle are asking for a solution. And, you know, the thing that encourages me is that I know that this issue will be taken up by regional governmental organizations. Madam Chair, I think you have something scheduled with, is it
CSG West.
CSG West, and then we're trying to get something going. That's the Council of States Governments West, and then NCSL, the National Council of Legislative, whatever they are. But so many states are wrestling with this issue that we think that critical mass can be achieved by calling for the question, and that's why we're asking Congress really to take up the issue.
Well, I still think you're being too modest, but that's okay. I will defer to your Chair Leininger.
Thank you. I think this is a great idea, and I really appreciate your leadership on it. When Senator Burdick and I went out to Colorado in probably January of 2015, we met with some marijuana business owners, and they were describing to us how hard it is for them to get money to a safe spot from their businesses. And one of the things that they said was, you know, they have essentially duffel bags of money that they have to carry to safety deposit boxes periodically. And I thought, that's like lyrics from a Nicki Minaj song. You know, it's not how we want legal businesses to have to run. And they feel very unsafe about it.
I think the Eagles recorded that song, Madam Co-Chair, in the mid-'80s.
Different reference points, yeah. But the same concept. So I think it's a great idea, and I'm eager to join in supporting it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And also, I might point out that our congressional delegation, members of our congressional delegation, primarily Representative Blumenauer and I think Representative Bonamici, are working hard to try to change some of these banking regulations at the federal level. And maybe this will give them a little boost. So I doubly appreciate you bringing this forward.
Madam Co-Chair, I think we do our best work when what we do is remove obstacles.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have a panel. Pam Levitt, Kevin Christensen, and Noah Stokes.
Should be the Just Do It panel.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Burdick, Chair Leininger, and members of the committee. I'm Pam Levitt, representing the Northwest Credit Union Association. We were before you with a panel on February 25th, and we gave you very extensive background, and there's testimony in OLA certainly on the limitations and challenges and barriers for financial institutions, and specifically credit unions in Oregon, for taking money from legal business, the marijuana business. So I just wanted to say that we are here in support. I want to thank Senator Farrelly for his leadership on this issue. Thank all of you for co-sponsoring Senate Joint Memorial 12, and let you know that we are working hard to work with Congress and certainly have them address these issues. Our own treasurer sent a letter to the Secretary of Treasury on June 8th, and I thought he summarized the issue very well. He said, "The ultimate solution on this issue will and indeed must come from Congress. While Treasury was well-intended in bringing financial operations out of the shadow with its 2014 guidance, the goal has not been met, and problems will only grow worse." So we stand with all of you to try to find a solution and address the challenges. And certainly as we move into this new law in Oregon, we want to protect our communities, and we certainly want to serve legal businesses in Oregon. So thank you for all of your leadership on this issue, and thank you, Senator Farioli.
Senator Burdick, Representative Leninger, good morning. My name is Kevin Christensen. I'm Government Affairs Director for the Oregon Bankers Association. And yes, it is almost the end of session, and the bankers and the credit unions are standing next to each other supporting the same bill. So something must be amiss, I guess. But in all honesty, I would echo Ms. Levitt's comments, because I think this is an important piece of legislation. It does raise the issue, and this is a federal issue that needs to be discussed and dealt with on the federal level to ease the anxiety that our institutions have with respect to banking marijuana. We do appreciate the leadership of not only this committee, Senator Farioli, but also the governor's office and the treasurer for coming forward. We're sitting on a task force to explore what kind of issues we can deal with on the state level, which candidly aren't many. It is, again, a federal issue that needs to be addressed, but this is a nice device to raise the attention of the issue. So we do appreciate your leadership and happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair Burdick and Leininger. I'm with the Oregon Cannabis PAC. My name is Noah, and I own CannaGuard Security. And I kind of have a unique perspective on this, owning a security company that provides security cameras and alarm systems for the regulated industry. Not only are we, you know, involved with protecting the people that want to be regulated and upstanding when it comes to the cannabis industry, but we are affected by banking, because we've already had one bank account shut down. I have OmniGuard Security, which is a normal home and business security company, and we were banking at the same place. And because I'm accepting payment from the cannabis industry, it's seen as probably money laundering as far as the bank is concerned. And so me selling security cameras to help regulate and protect the industry from theft and black market, I'm drastically affected by this process. And coming the regulated industry of Measure 91, the requirement of cameras and the estimated 2,000 applications that are coming in, which will probably be more like 3,000, there'll be a lot of cameras and a lot of business that has to be done. And for me, this is an incredibly important issue because people are going to want to buy a lot of security systems, you know, come next year, and they'll have to pay me, and I get paid in cash on a very regular basis, and I have to deposit that cash, and I have to be creative with how I get that into the bank, because security companies don't typically get paid in $50,000 and $20 bills. And so it's really inconvenient for my staff to then get, okay, we're collecting payment from a client. All right, who's grabbing the brown paper bag with cash and taking it back to the office? And it makes them very uncomfortable, and it makes me uncomfortable to have to put my employees in that position where they're driving around with cash. And, you know, if it's a project up in Washington, when they're staying overnight, they have it with them, and puts them at risk, and people know that they have it. And so it's been very near and dear to my heart to get some kind of banking solution for an ancillary company that is just trying to help the people that really want to do this right, that say, I want to be protected, I want to keep it out of the black market, I want to prevent it from diversion. I want to purchase cameras, and I have a hard time finding a solution to actually let them do that. We went to Washington, D.C. With the Oregon Cannabis PAC. It was fantastic. There's momentum, as you guys know, on banking solutions. And so keeping that momentum going and have it actually happen, not in 18 months or 24 months, but these guys that are walking around with bags of cash, walking into a dispensary with a public address and a big green cross on the outside, walk in with a bag of something and walk out with a bag of cash, and they're going home to their families. And so you guys, I'm sure, know all this, but as a security company and somebody who's trying to prevent diversion and protect people, it's weird to be taking cash and trying to be creative with how I get that into a bank. And we have banking relationships, luckily now, but how long is that going to last? And especially once the industry starts going fully regulated and goes crazy next year with these facilities opening up, and part of that being their security systems, it'll be very interesting if we don't have friendly banking relationships. So thank you guys so much for everything that you guys are doing. We really appreciate it, and we'd love to help out any way that we can.
Thank you. And just for the record, if you'd put your full name on the record.
Noah Stokes.
Thank you. Okay, questions from the committee. Senator Farrelly.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just want to put on the record this incongruity. You can walk into the county courthouse in any of 36 counties and pay your property tax with cash derived from marijuana production, and they'll take your cash.
Yeah.
And they'll give you a
receipt. Where do they bank?
Yeah. They'll give you a receipt. And you could walk into the Department of Revenue with a $100 bill snapped together in rolls, you know, in a cardboard box, and you can pay your income taxes. And everybody knows that, you know, you are a marijuana producer. And the reason we can do that is that the same regulations do not apply to government, state government, because of our state sovereignty, that would apply to individuals. And I think that incongruity is delicious. We can do, as a government, what we won't allow the citizens to do. So I think that is a strong argument for us rethinking the regulatory framework for banks, especially if we really want to track the proceeds from the marijuana industry. Where better to track it than in the banking system? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, other questions? All right. Thank you very much. We are going to close this public hearing and intend to call for a vote on this today, but I want to wait till we get a couple of our members back from Ways and Means. So we will now open up a hearing on Senate Bill 460. Adam.
Madam Co-Chair, Senate Bill 460, the committee is being asked to consider the -2, the -7, and the -9 amendments. What you'll find on OLIS, unfortunately, we do not have the paperwork on the -7 nor the -9 amendments. And the -9 amendments were posted last night at about 6:30 last night. I'll start with the -2 amendments and just point out where the -7 and the -9 amendments differ. The -2 amendments replace the measure. They allow medical marijuana dispensaries to sell up to 1/4 ounce of dried leaves and flowers and 4 immature marijuana plants to persons at least 21 years of age starting July 1st, 2015. It allows local governance to pass ordinances prohibiting sales, sunsets December 31st, 2016, declares an emergency, and is effective on passage. The -7 amendments, by and large, are the same. However, they start the early sale or on-time sale start date on October 1st, 2015. The -9 amendments are the same as the -7 amendments in that they start the sale date on October 1st, 2015. However, they allow the Oregon Health Authority to create rules implementing the measure. And as I mentioned, while we do have the fiscal and revenue paperwork on the -2s, we do not have the fiscal and revenue paperwork on the -7s nor the -9s.
Adam, let me ask you a question. The way you described the -9s, if we adopted those, we would not need the -7s?
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
Okay. So if we wanted to go... Okay, well, let's go ahead and do the public hearing, then we'll discuss that. Okay, we've got a panel of people, Sam Chapman, Noah Stokes, and Margo Lucas. Who? Oh, sure.
Good morning, co-chairs, members of the committee. My name is Sam Chapman. For the record, I am representing the Cannabis Genetics Preservation Society, and on their behalf, I'd like to thank you for including seeds in all of the dash amendments for potential on-time sales of recreational cannabis. The only other issue that I wanted to raise in regards to Senate Bill 460 is that of what time on-time sales happens. I think... I've already raised one of the issues as to pushing that date out, which was that small businesses are going to survive or flounder depending on what date we allow these sales to happen. And so I would encourage that to be the number one reason to adopt the -2s to allow 460 to be adopted effective on passage. The second reason, which I had not previously stated, which I'll state now, is that While not having a tax structure in place may be problematic for some, it's not going to be nearly as problematic when we have recreational come online next week and there's no outlet, and patients are going to be the target for people who want to get quality products from these stores. They have access now. A lot of people know patients. Caregivers can also purchase from dispensaries. That puts the number of potential people that can buy from these dispensaries well over 100,000. And you can bet that there will be shoulder tapping that will happen if we do not allow people over the age of 21 and over to have sales as early as possible. And that, I think, is probably one of the strongest arguments to adopt the Dash 2s, or as soon as possible to put this law into effect to allow people to have some access to products through existing medical marijuana dispensaries. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's finish the panel and then we'll go to questions.
Good morning. My name is Margot Lucas and I represent my companies, Cowgirl Cannabis, the Alternative Relief Clinic, and the pending West Salem Cannabis. And I just wanted to say briefly, first of all, thank you for all of your work this session. And I just wanted to add to the testimony to say that, yes, there are dispensary owners that are struggling. We are not open yet, but we will be hopefully opening soon. And it would be great if we could sell both medical and recreational. I believe we've just gotten done putting in all of our security and all of our tracking systems. And I believe those systems are sufficient to do the job. And so we wanted to just ask you to allow early sales. And I'll keep it short but sweet this morning and end right there. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning again. Thank you for being here, the co-chair and the committee. My name is Noah. I'm with the Oregon Cannabis Pack. I own CannaGuard Security.
Your last name, too.
Noah Stokes. Yes, sorry. I'm supporting this bill because, as we know, this is a, as we have a regulated outlet for people, as a security company, we sell cameras and, you know, make sure that these facilities are locked down and tracked and traced. And having an outlet for people that otherwise would not use the regulated market to sell their products, especially in the October timeframe at the end of the season, would allow them to be taking that money and those resources outside of the business owners that are trying to do it right and regulated and pay taxes on it and test it and check IDs and so giving them the opportunity literally as soon as possible. I agree with that, to be able to have them funnel that through the market and the process that we already have established would be very beneficial to the state and keep it out of the wrong people's hands and out of the wrong market. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Senator Prezansky.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Sam, I should know this answer, but I don't. Can you tell us how much a patient is able to purchase at a dispensary? I guess the lady in the middle will also be able to give us that answer.
So, Co-Chair Senator Prezansky, you know, in 3460, there was not any specific cap as to how much patients could purchase. So, to my understanding, and I'm not an attorney, so this is not to be construed as legal advice, but my understanding is that they're able to purchase what they are allowed to possess, which would be a pound and a half. I do not believe that happens often. I've been involved in ownership of dispensaries previously. I'm not anymore. So from my experience, that doesn't really happen. You know, an average sale in Portland, at least, is somewhere around $70, $80. I've heard other dispensary owners comp to that. It could probably go up in more rural areas because people have less dispensaries, less access, have to travel farther and want to, quote unquote, stock up, if you will. So I don't think those purchases are happening at that level, but that's not to say that they couldn't.
If I could follow up.
Please do.
And then under the proposals that we have, we are trying to have limited access of only a quarter ounce. And so your testimony earlier is one of the things I've been focused on, is that you could, in fact, have someone who is a medical card going in and buying a larger quantity than what they normally would, which could actually have a run on product that's available at the dispensary?
That is correct, yes. And I think, you know, it's a very dangerous situation for patients. You know, if we look at the current patient demographics, I believe it's somewhere around 40% of them are on some type of income welfare assistance. And if you think about that in equation with the fact that they're going to be a target for some people, I mean, granted, people are going to be able to get marijuana, regular marijuana, from a lot of people, you know, while we continue to bring this out of the shadows into the light. But they're aware that these new products exist, you know, and they're kind of sexy for a lot of people that haven't had access to them, right? Whether they be edibles or concentrates or, you know, they want to buy a specific type of clone, you know, or
step
seed
back
that
from
is in
the
dispensary.
Mic a little bit.
Sorry.
There you go.
You know, these new products are what the new market is going to want to, you know, really experience. And that is a huge reason why I believe, again, that sales as soon as possible, and again, I would encourage the committee to heavily consider the Dash 2 amendments to allow that to happen, because as I said, having taxes in place is a great thing and we should make sure that that is rolled out correctly. But the bigger problem, especially if we're considering the Cole memo, is going to be shoulder tapping and, you know, putting these patients in a legal bind, a lot of them.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Thank you all for being here today. One of the questions that I have when we think about potential start date is making sure that we protect access to medicine for patients. Do you have, what is your feeling about whether allowing adult use sales from dispensaries before October when the next harvest comes in would do for patients' access to medicine or the price of that medicine?
Well, I'll say something quick, and then I'll let these guys chime in as well.
The one thing that I would like to say is that I'm getting ready to open my facility, and we can't transfer yet. We don't have a state license yet, but I'm making phone calls and getting orders lined up so that we can transfer once we get that license. But it's not a problem at all to find inventory right now. I'm not having any problem at all this year. And this time of year, typically, you might start to have a little more of an inventory challenge going towards the outdoor harvest. But this year, I'm not surprisingly finding any difficulty in getting promises of transfers going.
Well, Co-Chair Leininger, the other thing I would add to that is that, you know, there may be, you know, on day one when you open up these sales, sure, there's going to be lines around the corner, right? And, you know, that is a slight concern of patients. I think that dies down. I mean, we've had, you know, marijuana in Oregon for a long time, right? And so, you know, if I'm a dispensary owner, I actually make sure that the day before, I do a fire sale for my patients, right? I do something to where they can, you know, because I'm going to be able to have a whole new influx of money that's coming in revenue, you can actually do something good for the patient. This is actually an opportunity, in my opinion, for some of these retailers to take advantage of the fact that they're going to have new revenue coming in, and they're going to be able to give back to their patients and say, thank you for supporting us and continuing to support us. And I really think there's actually a business opportunity there to do some good for the patients while also starting to scale your business in a way where it can take on more revenue and more clients and customers in general.
And if I may, on that, Co-Chair Leininger, there are simple processes that could be put into place. For instance, a typical dispensary knows their average sales, you know, of how much their actual patients are buying on a regular basis. So wherever that number is, to be able to have additional inventory, there is plenty of inventory out there. It's a matter of, is it attractive enough to pull it out of the black market and put it into a regulated market and allow for the sales to happen in state? And so I think if we made it attractive and without the tax and some of the things, it would be additional positives technically to pull that back in. In that October, Croptober time frame, there would be plenty if that access. And I think that would be a fantastic way, in my opinion, to take people that otherwise would not be in a regulated market to encourage them to bring it in and offer them a way to get their product into the stores and tested and regulated through that. And to be able to have even a separate line that patients get served first. They get, you know, to go in and have product or have a specific amount of inventory that they have to keep aside. That is what they typically sell over the last, you know, 4 months average. They have to have that much product set aside for their patients, and then any additional that they have access or could get access to would be able to be sold into the recreational market. You know, things like that could be very easily done to. If you can't get access to it, then you have access to it. If you can't have access to it, then you need to service just your medical patients there. And obviously having them stock up for, you know, a few weeks worth of medicine prior to the actual release date of that would probably be smart, just they don't have to deal with traffic and parking and lines. But I think that, again, you know, it would die down after a couple of weeks, after it wore off a little bit, and then it would be back to normal. And the product, I don't think the inventory is an issue at all.
Representative Wilson.
Madam Co-Chair, thank you. The easiest way for me to hash my way through this is to...
all right.
We're all thinking that way anymore.
Out of order.
What does delayed start accomplish versus what does on time or early sales accomplish? If you could summarize perhaps maybe the top three things that on time sales would accomplish. What would those things be?
I think the number one is it would accomplish closing the large hole, which will be, you know, the product leaking from patients to people over the age of 21, which, you know, the leakage is the illegal part. Once they possess it, it's more or less legal at that point, right? I mean, they have all those abilities, right? So it's the possibility of a patient risking themselves in terms of buying it for someone else. You know, again, 40% of these patients are on some type of welfare assistance. There's almost an incentive for some of these people to do this, right? I think... You know, a second one would be, again, a lot of these businesses, as I've testified before, are small businesses. And, you know, when I was involved with some of these dispensaries, you know, if you have about three employees and a regular overhead and you're not really buying too really expensive equipment or stuff to upkeep, you know, it's about $30,000 overhead. And if I had to guess, you know, I think it was about 4 months ago, I visited 100 dispensaries in Portland to do market research. And what I found was that for the people who are willing to kind of not open up their books fully but talk candidly about what kind of numbers they were doing, they were lucky to break even. Lucky. You know, maybe 25% of them were breaking even. And, you know, the top 5% of dispensaries in Portland were making a profit, right? So they are struggling. You know, if you haven't already sold your license to someone or just fallen flat, you were smart enough to set some money aside because you knew that it was going to be slow rolling up to recreational rollout. And I guess, you know, the third one, I'm trying to think, those are really the biggest two. Nothing is comparable to those two, in my opinion.
Okay, if I could, thank you, Madam Chair, if I could go back to your last point then. By an on-time start, you're basically saying, as it relates to these small businesses, that this is going to help small business to establish relationships with customers that they will hope to hang on to once the whole thing opens up. So an opportunity for small businesses to basically meet new people and build relationships with those folks before the overall plan rolls out.
Yes, I think that's correct. You know, a lot of it is going to have to do with, and a lot of the industry has already been picking up on the business 101 of regular retail, right? How important branding is, how important, you know, customer service is, you know, and a lot of vendors are learning the same thing. It's like when you drop off a product, you can't just say, go sell this, right? It's not going to sell itself anymore because there's so much product out there. You have to have a business savvy sense as to how to market it. What do people want? You know, if if you're a smart dispensary, you're, you know, giving all of your patients surveys, asking them, what do you like? What do you not like? This is not, you know, just walk into a store and get what you want and leave. I mean, you know, it's competitive. And so I think, you know, that competition, especially in places like Portland and Eugene and slowly Salem and other cities that are starting to see these, you know, pop up where there's not any, you know, specific cap outside of regulations and kind of default geographical caps, because you can only have so many in so many areas. You know, if we really want to support local business, I mean, this is the number one way to do it.
Okay. Thank you. I would just say in follow-up, I mean, ultimately, this is going to be the free market at work, and it's going to shake out one way or the other. But I understand the point that you're making there, so thank you.
Thank you. Sam, if you could go back, we're very close to sine die.
Right.
And if we don't get this right, we risk losing any kind of an early start. So if you had to settle for an October 1st date, I know you prefer earlier, how would that play out in your mind?
Well, again, you're going to have over 100,000 people who can purchase cannabis from medical marijuana dispensaries now, and we'll continue to have that right throughout July 1st. So that's 3 months of opportunity for people to be shoulder tapping these patients and to put them their cards in jeopardy. And, you know, I don't have all of the new criminal statutes in front of me, but I imagine that would not be necessarily treated lightly if that were to happen. The world's not going to end, but I really think if we have a concern about the Cole memo and a concern about leakage and a concern about doing it right, I really think and this is something I haven't stated before, Jeff Sugarman and I both helped co-author House Bill 3460, the law that is in place today that legalized and regulated medical marijuana dispensaries. And while that was not a perfect bill by any means, the Oregon Health Authority has done a great job in tightening up a lot of those regulations. Granted, we still have a lot of work to do on testing that this committee has done a great job of doing. I want to thank you for that. But the system that we have in place is great. You know, there are labeling requirements. There are packaging requirements. It kind of baffles me sometimes when we think about we have to start from this from scratch, where we have these regulations. These businesses exist now, and they're doing fine. I mean, we're not seeing, you know, the sky come down and crashing upon us like, you know, some of the media may have thought or people may have thought, just because they hadn't necessarily been in a dispensary. They hadn't seen the regulations. They haven't seen the packaging. They don't know that it has to be opaque, that it has to be child resistant, that all of these things are already in place. And then for whatever reason, we separate those conversations from medical and recreational, and we seem to start from square one on recreational. We should not reinvent the wheel here. The wheel is running well over on the medical side, and I really think that again is another reason that if we really look into all of the rules and regulations that we've crafted on the medical side, it's ready to convert over to recreational, given that there are some extra things that we need to consider when we're talking about not patients. We're talking about people over the age of 21, right? We're talking about the product being, you know, dispersed among a greater population in Oregon. So there's more things to consider. We need to make sure that those rules and regulations are tight and ready to go, and that we're not going to have problems when it does reach another population level and density. But I really think that the medical program is, you know, primed and ready for taking on temporary recreational sales as soon as possible.
Well, but you raised the point where you said that the people are interested in particular types of products.
Right, right.
And that what we're talking about is very limited. They'd only be able to get, you know, the
right.
flowers.
Right.
So wouldn't there still be shoulder tapping going on?
There would. Here's the difference between the black market and even limited sales in a recreational market. Your drug dealer is not doing 20% off Fridays. All right. The drug deal in the corner is not doing free roll Fridays. They're not doing buy one, get one free. There are deals going on at these dispensaries that the patients are taking advantage of, and everyone else is bummed because they don't get those deals, right? And I think that, again, that is part of the market evolution of the industry that we are at. It is getting advanced because of competition, because of a saturated market. You know, these are things that are only incentivizing people to that maybe haven't tried the product in 30 years, right? I mean, we're not talking about heavy users here. We're talking about people that now feel that finally I can possess it, I can grow it, and I can use it, but I can't buy it. But those other three things make me feel comfortable enough to where I know someone who can get it for me. And once I have it, I have no worries.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions from the committee? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have Pete Kramer.
Hello, my name is Pete Kramer. I'm with the Mercy Center. I'm a medical marijuana patient, grower, and caretaker. Like I said before, with the medical marijuana, we went many years without safe access to the medicine. We had growers, which I am one, and I surprised a couple of patients with their medicine in that. I give them 2 ounces a month. I don't ask anything. If they can give a donation, that's fine. Main thing is I'm growing the best cannabis that I can for myself and for the patients. The general public needs safe access to get the cannabis. They should be able to go into the medical store, to get their medicine or their cannabis at this time, to have safe access. The main thing is to have safe access, not having people tapping their friends, hey, here's $100, can you do something for me? Thank you for all your work in that and helping the people out. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? Thank you, Pete.
You're welcome.
Okay. Where did Senator Farioli go? Does anybody know? Is he just out there? I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 460. And if Senator Farioli is available, I'm going to open a work session on... Not there? The committee will be in recess for 5 minutes. Thank you. We will come back into session, and I will open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 12. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, thank you for the privilege of moving Senate Joint Memorial 12 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair Farioli has moved Senate Joint Memorial 12 to the floor with a do be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Okay, this carrier, let's see, who should we have a carrier on the Senate side? Do you have any suggestions?
Co-Vice Chair Prezanski, he was pointing at me.
Okay.
The I don't mind carrying.
Senator Farioli will carry, and Representative Leininger, who would you like to have carry?
I actually really like to carry that, too.
Representative Leininger will carry it on the House side. Okay, now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 460. Committee, we've had a lot of discussion about starting dates, about requirements in the bill, and I think Senator Farioli, Senator Prozanski has some things he'd like to say before we make motions.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I really am a firm believer that we need to get an on-time start. Clearly, we're not going to have an on-time start because July 1 is going to be this coming Wednesday. I feel that we should do everything in our power to legitimize individual Oregonians' rights that have been passed by the voters in 91 and allowing them to have legal access to recreational marijuana sooner than later. The amendments that I drafted went as soon as July 1. We know that's out. The next one was for August 1 and then September 1 and October 1. I clearly appreciate and understand both of the co-chairs have put a lot of time and work in talking to their caucuses and individuals and understand that, you know, the dash nines are probably where we're going to end up. But I wanted to put on the record that I feel that we are setting up a system where we are not going to be in compliance with the Cole memo based on allowing for what will be illegal sales for individuals to have legal possession. And it just seems to me having the regulated system up and running earlier would be a better approach than allowing for a three-month period of individuals doing shoulder tapping or whatever they may do to access what they have the right to possess come next Wednesday. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Senator Prozanski. Committee, we have members who have to leave on other important business for a moment. I don't like to close off discussion, but I would like to move right now into motions so that we can make sure we have our whole committee. Senator Farioli, do you have a motion?
Madam Chair, with great reluctance, because I actually believe that this would be possible earlier, but I understand that for the body, meaning the whole legislature, to move forward together, that maybe the dash nines are the only ones that would find favor with both chambers. So with reluctance, I move the dash nine amendments.
Senator Farioli, Vice Chair Farioli has moved to adopt the Dash 9 amendments dated June 24th, 2015. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Prozanski.
Yeah, I'm just going to agree with reluctance. I'll be supporting the measure or the amendment. I will also say that it's unfortunate the political will of this chamber, of this legislative body is not actually conceding what the voters have passed back in November and that we have not given them a cleaner path for access to what comes legal next week, July 1. Thank you.
Thank you. I can't argue with that. Representative Hill.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Really quickly, I could have gone as well for an earlier start than we're considering here. However, I agree also that we need to go forward together, and that's the best way for the committee to proceed. I would just say, for our record, and I think somebody should say this on the floor, too, in both chambers, for the purposes of the Cole memo, and the fact that we are allowing an early start on October 1st does not mean that we are suspending our existing enforcement laws that already make it illegal to have to transfer marijuana to persons that shouldn't have it. So we're not giving the public a green light to go out and break the law. We're not doing that. We expect the existing laws to be followed by every citizen, even though we acknowledge there is some potential for law breaking. And I don't think that we can legislate based on the idea that we expect people to break the law. We expect people to follow the laws that we've already passed and that we're going to pass. So I think that's important for Cole memo compliance, and we should I'd encourage the carriers to mention that for legislative history when we get to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Hillman. Thank you for putting that on the record. I might also point out that the problem we have here is inherent in Measure 91 because it had a timetable that did not match the legalization. And so we've been struggling with that all along. This this is kind of a middle ground. It probably doesn't, I know it doesn't go as far as some would like, and as I think some could very legitimately argue, but it's something to help us get a legal channel prior to the full implementation. Is there other discussion? Senator Farioli.
Oh, Rep. Leininger.
Gesturing.
Gesticulating. I think I understand that not everyone is satisfied with an October 1 start. I would say that it's 10 months earlier than the alternative if we were to not do this soft start approach. And I also think it's worth noting that from a coal memo compliance standpoint, the idea of having a start in October after or concurrently with the outdoor harvest coming through will address, give it a legal opportunity for sale and placement of that large amount of product that's going to become available in the fall. I also think, out of respect for the local jurisdictions who do have an opportunity to choose to do this soft start or not, as a former county commissioner, I know that it does take some time to pass an ordinance, and the provision that is included in the Dash 9s and all of the iterations of 460 that do this provides for local jurisdictions to pass an ordinance to not choose to do the soft start. And I think, you know, it makes sense for us to give them a meaningful opportunity to have the conversations and make a decision about whether that's going to work in their communities. I think an October start does that. I think, did this have a 90-day implementation period either way? It's not an emergency clause.
It is an emergency
clause. It is an emergency clause. All right.
It would be emergency clause anyway.
Okay. So in any event, I think this gives local jurisdictions a meaningful opportunity. It addresses a really large influx of product that's going to happen in the fall, and it's 10 months earlier than would have happened were we to not be doing this. So by virtue of us needing to come into it together and it accomplishing some good outcomes, I think that this is a good approach, and I'll support it.
Okay, further discussion. Are there objections to the motion? So ordered. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, point of order.
Yes.
I'm wondering if there's one other amendment that was on the schedule last meeting. We didn't move into for consideration, and that was the Dash 8. That was the issue that Pete Shepherd brought forward as to the issue. I'm wondering if we had got any feedback on from either legislative counsel as to his interpretation as to whether we could be opening up litigation.
We've decided not to move the Dash 8 amendment. Okay, Senator Farioli.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on Senate Bill 460 without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time.
Vice Chair Farioli moves that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on Senate Bill 460 without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time. Motion is undebatable. Are there objections? So ordered.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
In view that the rules have been suspended, I move for immediate sine die.
I second that.
I withdraw my motion. I withdraw my motion, Madam Chair.
Okay, you need that.
I move Senate Bill 460 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Farioli has moved Senate Bill 460 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections. So ordered. Okay, we need a carrier. do you two want to co-carry?
Sure.
All right. You two will co-carry. You deserve it. Representative Leininger, who would like to carry?
Representative Olson and I will co-carry that.
We're done.
All right. Good job.
I'll do it all over.
Yeah, I hate my stuff in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, but you do the tax too.
All right, now go ahead.
Yeah, you're taking us down the wrong path.
You're done?
No. You're adjourned.
More important.
I found that, you know, just ask.
More important.
I found that, you know.